In the construction business and can't find what you need, Quality Supply and Tool has served Hoosiers for over a quarter of a century. Tom Hawk is the branch manager of the Indy location on South Harding Street.
We've always been big on keeping our shelves fully stocked of inventory of industrial-grade tools, concrete, masonry products, as well as the necessary accessories to help get the job done. You don't have it, you can't sell it. Our experience allows us to help with getting the pros as well as the weekend pro taken care of.
Quality Supply and Tool also has locations in Bloomington and Jeffersonville to help you think outside the box. Store.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with jQuery and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Greetings and salutations. Fancy way of saying good evening to you. Or in the famous words of Sid Collins, Donald Davidson, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whatever time you may be listening. If you are not listening to us live here on the radio, perhaps in, as I know many of you do, replay form in terms of a podcast for Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool from inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. My name is Jake Query. Mike Thompson, the other voice you hear in this program, and Landon Coons, very capably producing it for us today. And what we do on this show of Beyond the Bricks is we essentially take a gift box, if you will, and we open it up to take a look back at the famous personalities, the moments, the stories that make the Indianapolis 500-mile race not only the greatest race in the world, but that have allowed for those traditions for us to see, as we will this year, 109 runnings of this event. But today, Mike Thompson, we're going to go back, and we're going to go back a ways on an anniversary year, because we are going to go back some 70 years ago to one of the more iconic races of the 108 previous installments that we've had of this great event, Mike.
Yeah, we got some fun. Tonight's not as fun, but we have some fun anniversary years coming up that I pulled some audio for. So I think that'll be interesting for folks at home to go back on some different anniversaries and play some clips that I don't think people have heard before.
1955, one of the perhaps most dominant careers that one could ask for at the Indianapolis 500-mile race is that of Bill Vukovich. And Vukovich is one, Mike, I think obviously everyone knows, you know, not only the greatness of Bill Vukovich as a driver, obviously the tragedy of Bill Vukovich as a driver, but I've always also thought that Bill Vukovich, interestingly enough, is one that probably in photo as much as in audio that we'll hear tonight, but certainly in image and in photo, Bill Vukovich is one that exemplifies all of the challenge and just the overall grit that takes place in being an Indianapolis 500-mile driver, and in particular in some of the weather conditions. There is such an iconic photo of him after one of the races just looking, quite frankly, filthy and exhausted after a particularly hard day at the track in the heat. Somebody that, as well, probably his own emotions in the day at the moments also were reflective of just the overall mood of Indianapolis.
Yeah, I mean, weather did play a part in some interesting moments for Bill Vukovich. I mean, you just mentioned that there's that iconic photo of him in 1953. They call it the workbench photo, where he's just absolutely exhausted on the workbench. And then, you know, he qualified in the rain, finished his qualifying run in the rain one year. And just, you know, weather did have some interesting impacts on Bill Vukovich, but an interesting person, an interesting character. You know, he was, you know, it was interesting because he was nicknamed the Mad Russian, and he wasn't either one of those things. He wasn't mad and he wasn't Russian. He wasn't actually either one. He was very interesting that he was a very private person. He was a person that he didn't let a lot of people in. He was an introvert, but, you know, he was definitely a person that he would joke around. If he knew you, he would joke around with you. But if somebody walked in the garage he didn't know, I mean, he would clam up immediately because he didn't want to say something in front of people he didn't really know.
Of course, a Californian, Bill Vukovich, and one who, as you had talked about, you go back and you look at 1953 and 1954, some of the hottest races on record at Indianapolis. Then in 1955, a little bit different, a day where, and we have seen this as well, 1992 comes to mind for a more, I guess, recent perspective to give people an idea of chilly temperatures at the Speedway. 56 degrees, a windy day in 1955. That in itself was unusual. But Mike, in addition to that, in the pre-race ceremonies, there was a new precedent that was set as well with one of the biggest stars of the era in 1955 at the Indy 500.
That's right. In 1955, Dinah Shore, who was a huge star at the time and was connected to Chevrolet, who sponsored her on television, Dinah Shore came to do two different things. One was, at the time, they had movie stars were kissing the winner in Victory Lane. So they would have a movie star of the day. And so she was invited to do that. And then in addition, she was also asked to sing what we know as Back Home Again in Indiana. And she, at that point, was the first female singer, and she's still, to this day, the only female singer of Back Home Again in Indiana. And she's the only one who sang multiple choruses. So when she sings it, you'll hear that she says, you know, hey, will you all join with me and sing it again? And she's the only person who's done that as well. So an interesting fact about Dinah Shore.
Dinah Shore singing at the 1955 Indianapolis 500.
Here's the Chevrolet girl herself, Dinah Shore, who will kiss the winner in Victory Lane a few hours from now, singing Back Home Again in Indiana.
The gleaming candlelight still shining bright through the sycamore for me. The new moon
once again, as hundreds and hundreds of brilliantly colored balloons have been released from a gigantic tent and soar skyward to add to the pageantry preparatory to the start of this 39th annual running of the 500-mile race.
Now, Sid Collins might not have allowed us to hear more of Dinah Shore in terms of the singing in that exact moment, but fear not, we'll hear more from Dinah Shore coming up on this particular episode of Beyond the Bricks. But she was at the Indianapolis 500-mile race, of course, for the race itself in 1955, and it would lead to, at the start of the race, one of the great battles that you would see between Jack McGrath and then, of course, you know, Freddie Agabashian was there as well, and Bill Vukovic, the two-time defending winner who was going for his third straight at Indianapolis. This is how it sounded. The start of the 1955 Indianapolis International Sweepstakes 500-mile race.
They seem to be in almost perfect order from my vantage point. And there's the pace car starting into that left turn. Those are the only turns they have out here. You just turn left, as some of the boys say. And I think that Jim Shelton can see them now.
That I can, Jack Shapiro. And what a beautiful sight. That beautiful Chevrolet leading all of these sleek 33 motorized beauties off to a flying start. And off to a flying start they will be in just a few seconds from now. You can hear them go by up here on the north turn. This lap is run naturally at a lower rate of speed, and they must keep position. And that's not easy either. It's like holding a wild bronco to an exact position. The beautiful lead car, the Pacer, is a convertible Chevrolet with T.H. Keating at the wheel and a true gentleman, Mr. Tony Holman, directing traffic from the rear seat. And now they're on the bricks, the home bricks, and on the starting line is our chief announcer for this big race, Sid Collins. Can you see him?
We can hear him, and in just a second we'll see him. Here goes the pace car. Race fever is now at the boiling point as we make up for one of the most thrilling moments in sport. And here's the pace car. The
pace car passed the starting line at about 90 miles an hour, pulled off to the left onto the pit apron and stopped a few feet from the end of the narrow space of apron as the car is charged past. And around the south turn, Bill Froese.
It's Jack McGrath out in front, Tony Bettenhausen and Jerry Hoyt. 1, 2, 3, Jack McGrath, Bettenhausen and Jerry Hoyt. They're around the curve, they're out of it and into the southeast, down the straight and on down to Jack Shapiro.
Thank you, Bill. It's still McGrath.
Into the turn very tightly with Bettenhausen right behind him and McGrath, and now I think Jim Shelton can see them.
That I can, and it's still McGrath, still Bettenhausen, and Jerry Hoyt in that order. McGrath, Bettenhausen, and Hoyt in that order. They're coming into the home stretch again, and here is Sid Collins to pick them up as they come down that home stretch.
And this stretch, of course, is a mile long, the fastest automobiles in the world, shooting past here like a bomb in just a moment. Jack McGrath, way ahead, about 6 yards, Tony Bettenhausen, after Bill Bukovin, Jerry Hoyt, Freddie Akimason, the first five in that order. That's our first lap, Jack McGrath, who set the pace many times here at the Speedway, holds the records for qualifications at about 143 miles an hour for one lap and 141 for the four. This year, about at the 142, leading the race. That boy moves down from that third spot on the outside. Jerry Hoyt of Indianapolis was in the pole, and he tried to lead the first lap, but McGrath is the man with the charged-up chariot as the fastest qualifier of all the cars in this field, and he had the ideal spot to move down in front of the pack, and he did it. The quickest car, the man with the longest nerve, led the first lap and begins to pick up the $150 per lap prize.
Sid Collins calling the start of the race there and describing it in 1955. Mike, it would turn out that in that early broadcast of the race, Sid Collins, who was the master, of course, at painting the picture of what was taking place at, as it was known then, still is today, the Great Speedway, he also would relay, probably not knowing so at the time, a tragically prophetic story at the start of that 1955 broadcast, Mike.
Yeah, that's right. And if you listen to the 1955 race, and we'll hear some of the clips here today, including this one here in a minute, there are a lot of really surreal moments in this 1955 broadcast. I mean, so many of them. This next one is absolutely surreal. And then there's a couple more really surreal moments coming up in our next segment. But this next one, when I heard it, I mean, it honestly stopped me in my tracks. I'll be interested to hear what you think of it, because I think you'll be hearing it for the first time. But it really did stop me in my tracks when I heard it for the first time.
Sid Collins in 1955.
Friends, the field has really stretched out here. These boys are being lapped by the leaders. And now here they come. There's the Sumar Special, number 48, Jimmy Daywald. You fans listening over WIOU in Kokomo or WTRC in Elkhart are very interested in Jimmy because he hails from Wabash, Indiana. Matter of fact, we have 7 drivers from Indiana in the starting field, 14 from California, 3 from Illinois, 1 each from Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Oklahoma, Arizona, Massachusetts, and the state of Washington. Done it. Tommy Milton, Jimmy Murphy, Billy Arnold, Floyd Roberts, and Bill Bukovich. And Bill Bukovich is out for his third straight, and he's really going for it. This year when he arrived in Indianapolis in Speedway City, Bukovich said, when asked if he intended to win, "What do you think I'm back here for? Not for my health." Well, that's a strange way to put it, because this isn't the healthiest business in the world, but the way Bukovich does it, he doesn't race too much throughout the year. In fact, he announced a retirement except for the 500 at the end of last year's encounter and ran his filling stations out in Fresno. You folks are listening over KMJ. But Bill couldn't hold back the spirit of racing. He did run a few small races during the past year, and of course he's really running one here today. Unofficially now, at the end of 18 laps, we have Bill Bukovich in car number 4 first, Jack McGrath number 3 second, third is Freddie Hatch in car number 8, fourth number 10, Tony Bettenhausen, and fifth, number 14, Freddie Agabation. All favorites, all veterans, all men who are picked by someone or other to win the race.
It is obviously, Mike, ironic that he would talk about Bill Vukovich weighing out health in terms of weighing out trying to win. Because as we would hear, or will hear, some 38 laps after that, that ultimate balance or imbalance would be on display. Certainly in those days, and I think, Mike, a lot of people, even though we are aware of it and we can read about or listen to the element of danger that took place back in particular in those eras, it maybe even is foreign for somebody who is just becoming a race fan or just learning about the Speedway to really grasp just how ubiquitous the danger and the threat of that around the corner at any time it was for those drivers and how aware of it they were in that era of racing at Indianapolis.
No, there's no question about it. I just think that clip was just unbelievable. The fact that he, you know, what, I'm not here for my health. And then what happens, you know, later, a few minutes later. And the fact that people may not recall, I mean, what you're just talking about is how dangerous it was. People may not recall that one time, three different Indianapolis 500 drivers lost their lives at two different tracks in one day. And that's essentially one row of the Indianapolis 500 from that year, you know, lost their lives on what was called Black Sunday. And so you just think about the fact that, you know, three different drivers from that year's field were lost at a couple different tracks. I mean, just that era, I can't imagine what it was like to be a race fan during that era and picking up the paper and seeing, you know, so-and-so, Cecil Green lost his life, or Walt Brown lost his life, or all these different drivers. I just can't imagine what that was like.
We mentioned Dinah Shore and hearing from Dinah Shore at the beginning of the race. She would join eventually Sid Collins in the broadcast booth in what would become one of the most surreal audio clips in Indianapolis 500-mile race history. We will let you hear that when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
The construction industry in Indiana has depended on Quality Supply and Tool, a local family-owned business, to deliver quality sales and service over the last 25 years. The employees make the difference, like sales expert Nick Worley.
What sets us apart is we only offer quality tools and supplies from quality manufacturers. We have a quality trained sales and service staff knowledgeable of the products we sell and offer. Quality. It's in our name.
On South Harding Street in Indy, plus Bloomington and Jeffersonville, Quality Supply and Tool thinks outside the box. Store.
The future of Harlem rests in your hands.
The MGM Plus original series, Godfather of Harlem, returns. Starring Academy Award winner Forrest Whitaker.
There's a new kid in town.
And Rome Flynn as Frank Lucas.
I'm the boss of me.
Critics rave about the rare gangster epic.
My father's planning a war.
Praising it as a great prestige drama.
Nobody plays Frank Lucas.
We will go to war.
Godfather of Harlem. Watch now, only on MGM Plus.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Jake Query, Mike Thompson, Landon Kuhn serving as producer here. Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Taking a look back 70 years ago this year, assuming that you are listening to this, if it's in a podcast form, in the year 2025. If you're listening to it after that, humor me, because we are, of course, talking about this in 2025. From the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center, 70 years ago, the 1955 Indianapolis 500-mile race. And we heard from Dinah Shore singing Back Home Again in Indiana, or Indiana as it was known then. We heard Sid Collins giving you the narration at the start of the race. There was an epic battle taking place between Bill Vukovich and, of course, those that started up front. Vukovich did not start with the lead. Jack McGrath had the lead. He and Bill Vukovich had swapped it back and forth amongst the first 15 laps of the race. Freddie Agabashian was there as well. It was just prior to lap 40 when Freddie Agabashian would spin and would drop out of the race. But that's not to say that there wasn't great racing that was taking place throughout. Now, one of the things, Mike, that would take place during the race itself, even with the great action on the track, Sid Collins was no stranger towards those that were of the top of the game of fame in Hollywood and throughout. And he so much enjoyed having people like Dinah Shore come up into the broadcast booth to be interviewed during the course of the race.
Yeah, that's correct. He enjoyed doing these kind of, he loved being the kind of the master of ceremonies. I always kind of thought he was like the master of ceremonies for the world's biggest, you know, barbecue, that type of thing. And I think he saw himself a little bit as kind of an Ed Sullivan and, you know, in having people from all different walks of life come into the booth. I mean, he'd have politicians and he'd have, you know, celebrities from, you know, movies and television and things like that. So I think Sid really enjoyed doing those type of interviews. And so he had the opportunity to have Dinah Shore come in the booth. And what's kind of surreal though about this clip is this is one continuous clip. I did not edit this together in any way. This was all one continuous clip. But at one point, Dinah Shore actually, you could tell she actually knew something about racing because she actually switches to play-by-play mode, which was kind of interesting in this clip. And then, you know, there's a tragedy at the end of the clip. So it's about the most surreal 5 minutes, I think, in Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network history.
The 1955 broadcast of the Indianapolis 500.
Now we have the lovely young lady, brown-eyed and honey-haired, I think the publicity report says, which is certainly true. Songstress, Miss Dinah Shore. Are you getting ready for your trip to Victory Lane in a couple of hours, Dinah?
Oh, I tell you, the moment when I get to present that Borg-Warner trophy is going to be the thrill of my life. Sid, I've never quite seen anything like this.
Is the pace a lot faster here than out in Winchester, Tennessee, Dinah?
Short, and let's see, what time is it in California?
Well, it's 12 o'clock here right now, I judge around.
They're
10.
Probably listening. Hi.
You're going to be saying lots of hi's, and lots of people will be saying hello to you in Victory Lane. I hope you aren't crushed. For the women in the audience, I wonder if you could describe the dress that you have on today.
Well, I had hoped the sun would be shining a little more. It's crisp white cotton, eyelet, I suppose you'd say, and the Chevrolet red, shall we say?
That's about, I would say.
And white gloves and a bright red coat.
Well, it's going to get very, very greasy when you go down to Victory Lane, I'm sure, but it'll be a lot of fun for you. The girls who have been here before have all enjoyed it.
This whole occasion has been a lot of fun, and I'm so glad to have been a part of it.
Thank you very much, Dinah Shore.
Thank you.
We'll have your shoes back out of the cement very soon, too, where you place them along with Barbara Stanwyck, Marie Wilson, Jane Greer, Loretta Young, and the other girls who have kissed the winner. Now to Charlie Brockman for the standings at this point.
All right, Sid. Bill Vukovich is on his 56th lap. We have not received the standings at the end of 50 laps, but we have them unofficially, and they're going to be jumbled up very shortly. The caution light is out. The caution light is out, and we'll probably be getting a report very shortly, so I'll hold it here just temporarily before getting into the standings. The caution light is out, indicating trouble. Let's go to the back stretch and Jack Shapiro.
Thank you very much. Roger Ward's car, the Aristo Blue Special, he got out of it in a hurry. The cars are slowing down. There are four cars out here in trouble. Five, I see. Car number 68 is sitting on the grass. It is the Ed Elysian's car, the Westwood Gauge and Tool Special. There's a wheel on the track. There is much trouble back here. Car number 42, I see, is also on the inside, just half on the track and half on the grass. That car number 42 is the Trailer Special with Al Keller driving. Car number 39 went over car number 27. bounced a couple of times, and they're turning it back over. It's Johnny Boyd Sumar special. Johnny is still sitting in the car, and there are people around him. He's getting out now. It looks like he's getting out under his own power. The drivers have slowed down to a very slow pace going by this. The car that's on the far side of the track and off the track, I cannot see the number. Perhaps my engineer can pick it up for me. Car number 27, Roger Ward's car. Roger's sitting on the grass off the track, and he looks to be fine. There are a couple of state troopers with him. The ambulance has pulled up, and they're helping Johnny Boyd. There is a car burning, and I cannot tell the number from here. There are 5 cars all together. One is off the track on the outside, and it's about 100 yards from me. I cannot see what car it is. They are putting out the fire now. On the back stretch here, it is mayhem. All 4 wheels have come off the number 39 Sumar car that Johnny Boyd was in. Johnny is out of the car, and it looks to be all right from here. I cannot see what car it is that is burning. The cars are going by very slowly through the traffic. They're slowing down. They're still running, but they're slowed way down to
Jack,
about 20 miles an hour. Yes, sir.
Why don't you drop the mic for a second, go check, and come call us back when you see those numbers. We won't call you until you get back.
I'll check the car that is burning. I certainly will, Sid.
Thank you very
much. Thank you,
Sid. Stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing. Evidently, Bill Vukovich, the leader, was involved in that smash-up. We have not seen him go by. These cars are rolling at over 50 miles an hour down the main stretch here. Charlie, did you notice any other cars missing?
Well, Sid, just checking from the lap board across the way, Bob Swigert has completed 58 laps and Vukovich only 56, and so Vukovich has been missing for 2 laps. We saw his pit crew, Jim Travers, Frank Kuhn, and Herb Porter looking down the straightaway, looking for Vukovich and not seeing him, and they are look very disheartened at this moment. We have been watching for Vukovich, and so very apparently Vukovich is in some sort of trouble, and we don't know where. Sid?
Couple of things from that clip that are oh so interesting. To begin with, the Dinah Shore part, which when you're listening to that of the accident, you almost forget what you'd heard in the beginning of the clip, which was Dinah Shore, to Mike's point, almost doing play-by-play of seeing what was taking place on the racetrack. Sid Collins mentioning Dinah's 2 young children at that time, including mentioning her daughter, Melissa, who was, I believe Sid says in that, he makes comment of the fact that she is 6 years old. She actually now is still living at the age of 77 years old, which is the age Dinah Shore was when she passed away of ovarian cancer in 1994. But you could tell, Mike, as you listen to that, the fact that, you know, it is obviously a different era, and there was still some confusion as they were trying to gather the information as to what was taking place. And clearly at the outset of that accident, those that were in the master control tower or along the main straight were completely unaware, understandably so, of the tragedy that had befallen Bill Vukovich off of turn number 2.
That's correct. I mean, the information was relayed in much different ways back then. And so it was, a lot of it is sight. As Sid mentions, when, you know, he tosses to a break, Sid comes back and they haven't seen Bill Vukovich. So then that's how they deduce that the missing car is Bill Vukovich. But it's not the same way as obviously we get the information today. So a much different scenario. But that clip to me, it's so interesting and so kind of surreal, as I keep coming back to, because you start with the Dinah Shore interview and she's so effervescent and you could tell she's having such a good time and you could tell she's enjoying her stay in Indiana and everybody's treating her so well. And she's obviously engaged in the event. You know, she's soaking it all in and she knows who Jack McGrath is and she wants to know more about the pit lane and how many people do you have here and everybody's treating me so well. And they literally end the interview, and as they're ending the interview, you hear Charlie Brockman say, we're on the, you know, the leader's Bill Vukovich is on his 56th lap, and that's his last lap. You know, he doesn't make it for another lap. So to me, that's one of the most surreal clips in the history of the race.
I have always, from a number standpoint, found it fascinating that Bill Vukovich would win the race in 53 and 54, and then in trying to win in 55, his race would end on lap 56. It was during that time of the race, by the way, Jack McGrath was being interviewed, who, of course, was part of those duels at the beginning of the race. He was being interviewed as there was still confusion on the backstretch. Jack McGrath was talking about dropping out of the race.
Okay, Greg, and I think Luke Walton has Jack McGrath standing by, right, Luke?
Hello.
Yes, Luke, go ahead. You're on. Luke
Jack
Walton.
Jack McGrath, one of the popular drivers of the race right here, is out of the race. Jack, what happened?
We have mechanical trouble. We can't really tell right now. Either magneto or fuel system or something happened. I don't know. The car just started missing real bad.
You're having a little trouble with oil right there at the start.
Yes, right at the start. I don't know. I think we had too much oil in the oil tank or something, and it threw it all out, which might have run into some pre-ignition and knocked something else out.
What are you going to do now, Jack?
Oh, I'm going to stand by for Sam Hanks. Relief.
Thank you very much, and tough luck. I know all the fans from coast to coast are mighty sorry to hear about that motor trouble, and if you get another ride, a lot of good luck.
Thanks.
That was Jack McGrath, and now back to the Pagoda and Sid Collins.
All right, Luke, thank you. Now back to Jack Shapiro for some more information about the accident. Jack?
All right, thank you, Sid, very much. What happened out here, precisely now, car number 27 with Roger Ward got into trouble coming out of that southeast turn and started to slide down this back stretch. As he got to the bridge, he was sideways, and car number 39, driven by Johnny Boyd, the Sumar Special, went up and over him and bounced about 50 feet down the track. It lost all four wheels in the process. Roger Ward's car is only about 20 feet away from us, right out in the middle of the track still. Then car number 68, to keep from hitting all of the trouble that was happening, went off into the infield to my left, and it's sitting on the grass there. That's car number 68, the Westwood Gage Tool Special, driven by Ed Elysian. Then car number 42 did the same thing, the trailer special driven by Al Keller, and Bill Vukovich, evidently going to the outside to miss the trouble, went over the wall, and that car is still burning over there. Now, the drivers, car number 27, Roger Ward, got out and is over on the grass. He looks to be all right. Ed Elysian didn't hit anybody, and he was all right. Car number 42 with Al Keller driving, he looks to be all right. Johnny Boyd was still sitting in the car when it came to a rest on its back. It was turned over, and they helped Johnny out of the car. He's sitting on the grass and looks to be all right. Now, what happened to Bill Vukovich? We have no information.
Now, Mike, what would take place very shortly thereafter is something that would have essentially impact on protocol at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway moving forward from that, and that is the fact that people caught on to something that took place when, unfortunately and tragically, the ambulance in which Bill Vukovich was leaving the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I think there were those that were there covering the race that noticed something as it was leaving the grounds of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
That's 100% correct. The Conkle ambulance, when it left the speedway, instead of making a left turn that where it would go to Methodist Hospital, it made a right turn to go to the Conkle funeral home. And people covering the race noticed that and immediately started picking up on that. And you're right, that has changed the protocol that, with situations where there's a, sadly where we've had fatalities involved, everyone is taken to the hospital. And people, when there's a sad situation where there's a fatality, they died at the hospital. They didn't die at the speedway. No matter what you've seen, in front of you, where I saw the Gordon Smiley situation. We talked about it my first day at the speedway. The driver is still taken to the hospital, and that's because of what happened with Bill Vukovich. When people saw the ambulance make the right turn toward Conkle in Speedway, they knew, unfortunately, the situation, even though there hadn't been a public announcement of any kind yet.
The Conkle funeral home that, ironically, coincidentally, whichever way you would like to use the two words, Bill Vukovich walked past on the morning of the 1955 race from the home that he had been staying in Speedway, to walk to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, went right past the funeral home where tragically his body would be taken. And then ultimately it would be announced to the radio audience that one of the true champions of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway was lost. Yet another surreal moment from Sid Collins in the 1955 radio broadcast.
And we have another guest we'd like for you folks to meet from coast to coast. He is the violinist extraordinary, Mr. Florian Zemach, who has been entertaining here. Hi, Florian. How are you?
I want to tell you something. You know, I was born in Chicago, which is actually a couple of miles away.
And this up the pike.
My very first time here, and boy, what an exciting day.
Isn't this tremendous?
Well, I'll tell you what I've been doing. This is my first chance to really see one of these races. I have seen them all in the movies, and I've listened to them on the air and all that. But this is the first time in person, and it's a real thrill.
Boy, and you've been watching the qualifications, too,
yes,
haven't you?
I've been down just about every afternoon.
How does this compare to playing the violin, Florian?
Are you speaking of a hot canary fiddle or just
a
plain
fiddle? It's hot out here today. Did you have a favorite in this race?
Well, Yukovich has been a favorite of mine for a long time. And in the last week or so, I got to know him personally and enjoy his, naturally, what he's doing out here very, very much. You know, it's a lucky thing for me. This is the first time I have had the pleasure to be in Indianapolis in person. And I'm appearing in town and took this advantage of every opportunity to come down and see the qualifications, which were very exciting, too.
Florian, thank you very much for being on our broadcast.
It's your real sweetheart to have me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Florian and Zemach. Friends, we have some very, very disheartening news to relate to you. An official report from the Speedway Hospital here from Dr. Bonner, the director of medical staff at the Speedway. And in broadcasting this race now in our eighth consecutive year, we have never had to make such an announcement, and we're most regretful. Bill Vukovic, three-time winner of the 500-mile race, almost trying for his third consecutive today, trapped in his car in the backstretch, was injured fatally. Bill Vukovic has died as a result of injuries suffered on the backstretch in the accident reported to you earlier on this broadcast. Elysian, Ward, Keller, and Boyd were not seriously hurt. Bill Vukovic has lost his life in the 500-mile race. Shorty Candlin is the last driver to have lost his life in the running of the race here at the Speedway. And it's a deep regret to all of you listeners of sports throughout the nation, especially to those in Fresno, California, his hometown, and most particularly to us who know him, who knew him here at the Speedway, who have lost a very good friend. But as racing continues, the same as it does today, with the death of Wilbur Shaw, Bob Scott, Mike Nazareth, Manny Ayulo, Alberto Ascari, and many others, the race is the thing. That is their sport, that's their chosen profession, and their life's blood. And as they pass away, the sport continues as it does in front of us.
One thing that I think should be pointed out, it is very easy when you hear that to assume that what Sid Collins meant when he said three-time winner almost was that he was implying the cruelty of the fact that Vukovic was on his way perhaps to winning that race in 1955. And it does sound, when you hear it that way, almost cruel. While I don't know this for certain, it is my belief that what he meant was the implication that in 1952, that was another race that had gotten away from Vukovic because he led 150 laps of that race and was within 10 laps of winning when he dropped out. And so therefore, I think that's what he was meaning or implying in that case. And I think, again, if you look later at the Eddie Sachs, Dave McDonald situation, for example, that would take place 9 years later, you would see that Sid Collins would make sure that he had a better preparation for the moment when tragedy would strike at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway than he did in the first time, understandably so, as he mentioned there in his broadcast for the passing of Bill Vukovic. Even with the tragedy at the race would go on, which means there would be a winner of the 1955 Indianapolis 500-mile race. We'll let you hear how things shaped out after the tragedy when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
The construction industry in Indiana has depended on Quality Supply and Tool, a local family-owned business, to deliver quality sales and service over the last 25 years. The employees make the difference, like sales expert Nick Worley.
What sets us apart is we only offer quality tools and supplies from quality manufacturers. We have a quality trained sales and service staff knowledgeable of the products we sell and offer. Quality. It's in our name.
On South Harding Street in Indy, plus Bloomington and Jeffersonville, Quality Supply and Tool thinks outside the box. Store.
The future of Harlem rests in your hands.
The MGM Plus Original Series, Godfather of Harlem, returns, starring Academy Award winner Forrest Whitaker.
There's a new kid in town.
And Rome Flynn as Frank Lucas.
I'm the boss of me.
Critics rave about the rare gangster epic.
My father's planning a war.
Praising it as a great prestige drama.
Nobody plays Frank Lucas.
We will go to war.
Godfather of Harlem. Watch now, only on MGM+.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
And we thank you for listening to Beyond the Bricks, taking a look back at the 1955 Indianapolis 500-mile race, and you had heard Jack McGrath, Bill Vukovich, those that battled up front. Once they were no longer racing, and obviously the tragedy involving Bill Vukovich, there still was a race to be won. And Bob Swikert, Jimmy Bryan, Don Freeland, Art Cross, all would be right in the mix of things. There would be other crashes that would take place. There would be other critical injuries that would take place. But in the end, Bob Swikert is the man that would take the checkered flag of the 1955 Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Pat O'Connor in 29 was running in second place. 91 laps of the broken fuel line. Bob Swikert is now on his 198th lap. Two laps to go. Be set for the white flag, and we see it come out for number six, Bob Swikert. And if he continues running steadily, he should take the checkered flag this year to become the winner of the 39th annual 500-mile race here at Indianapolis, Indiana. Bob Swikert, barring the gusts of wind that Jim Shelton just described or any other mishap, should be our winner here in two more laps. Then we'll switch you down to victory lane for all of the excitement and the activity down that way. O'Connor in 29 was in the pits 4 minutes, 28 seconds, repairing his fuel line. The sun has come out once again to make a spectacularly beautiful finish of this 500-mile race. Gorgeous white clouds floating overhead. No one has left as yet. Everyone wants to stay and watch a new champion crowned here at the Speedway. Getting set to flip the card across the way is one of the unofficial timers and scorers on the board. Fans will have that white flag for you right now. Coming down for Bob Swikert. There it is. Let's follow Bob Swikert around in number six, the John Zink Special. He's just going into the south turn, and here he comes, Bill Frosch.
And here he comes, driving beautifully right into that groove. Coming right down in front of us right now, down the chute and into the southeast turn. He takes the southeast turn very nicely, riding the same groove he's ridden for the last 50 miles. Now, Jack Shapiro, you should be able to see him.
I sure can. I sure can, Bill. Here comes Bobby Swikert, the hometown kid from Speedway City, driving Jack Zink's car out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Jack Zink is a good friend of mine. I know Jack Zink Jr. is really going to be a happy boy. He's going into the northeast turn. He's on his way in there, and I think in a moment, Jim Shelton will catch sight of him.
All right, Jack Shapiro, we certainly can see him. A good-looking car and a good-looking driver. And he's headed for the home stretch. This man has really driven a race. Cool, calm, and collected, and that goes for both driver and automobile. You can hear the cheers in the home stretch, and here's Sid Collins. Pick him up.
We can't see him yet, but here he comes down, I'm sure. That beautiful pink car, the checkered flag is out. Bill Vandewater, the starter, holds it high, waves it, and there's Bob Swikert, the winner of the first time venue.
And Bob Swikert, in his post-race interview, would, in proper tone, express concern and question about who was injured in the big crash that had taken place in that race. That certainly might have tempered the celebration for Bob Swikert. And the loss of Vukovich, as well as other prominent drivers during the course of the season, dozens of fans at Le Mans as well were injured and were lost. And that led to big changes at the end of AAA's involvement in racing. As Speedway historian emeritus Donald Davidson explains, there were a lot of changes that took place after all of the tragedy that befell the 1955 racing season.
This was the final year for the race to be sanctioned by AAA. The contest board of the American Automobile Association had been the sanctioning body at the track since it opened in 1909. And for some years, there had been discussions, rumors that maybe AAA would be getting out of racing. And 1955 was just a terrible year around the world. Vukovich was fatally injured at Indianapolis. Just 4 days before that, Alberto Ascari, who was was probably the top driver in Europe at that time, had lost his life in an accident at Monza in Italy, and a number of other leading drivers, several of the 1954 top 10 at Indianapolis didn't make it until May of 1955. And then right after Indianapolis, there was a disaster at Le Mans, which I think 82, 83 spectators lost their lives, and AAA said, that's it, we're done, we're out of racing. And so they went up through the end of 55 and then they left. And Tony Holman was very instrumental in the forming of the United States Auto Club, which became the sanctioning body for the following year.
Mike, obviously, a lot of changes that came. Always good to hear from Donald, needless to say, in 1955, but a year full of history that we take a look back at tonight from 70 years ago.
Yeah, it was good to take a look back at that and hear some interesting clips, and always good to have Donald in the show.
We always appreciate everybody listening to yet another episode of Beyond the Bricks.
The future of Harlem rests in your hands.
The MGM Plus original series, Godfather of Harlem, returns. Starring Academy Award winner Forrest Whitaker.
There's a new kid in town.
And Rome Flynn as Frank Lucas.
I'm the boss of me.
Critics rave about the rare gangster epic.
My father's planning a war.
Praising it as a great prestige drama.
Nobody plays Frank Lucas.
We will go to war.
Godfather of Harlem. Watch now only on MGM Plus.
Life is full of uncertainties, but finding the right lawyer shouldn't be one of them. At TK Law, we believe divorce doesn't have to tear your family apart. Our collaboratively trained attorneys work to help guide you through the process with solutions that protect what matters most, your family, your future, and your peace of mind. With the right guidance, you can move forward with confidence. Find a lawyer that truly cares. Visit onefirmforlife.com to learn more about your options today. TK Law, One Firm for Life.